Welcome to Better Words, a podcast for readers who want to know the stories behind the pages.
We're your hosts, Caitlin and Michelle, two book nerds who bring you in-depth conversations about writing and publishing from those on the inside.
Basically, we're just here to talk about books.
We're so glad you're joining us. Hello, welcome to a reread episode of Better Words. We're so excited about this one.
Yes, so much fun revisiting this.
It really was. So today we have Jodie McAllister on. Now, we first interviewed Jodie in July 2022, and we spoke to her about her YA novel, Libby Lawrence is Good at Pretending, but right at the same time, she actually also had her first novel in this series, Here for the Right Reasons, being published shortly after. So I think by the time our episode aired, it was out, maybe. Like, it was, they were quite close together because they were so different and with different publishers.
Yeah. We had a brief chat about it, and we talked about her sort of research and stuff in the field. She's got such a fascinating sort of research life as well, looking into reality TV and stuff. We spoke a lot about that. But obviously, yeah, the book hadn't really come out at that point. And this is one of the reasons we wanted to ask her on again, because not only has the book been out a while, but the trilogy is now complete. So we wanted to sort of dive a little bit more into that world.
Yes, into the world of Marry Me, Juliet. So hopefully anyone who follows me on Instagram, I have been going on about these books for ages. I really took Jodie's recommendation after we talked about it and read the first book, Here for the Right Reasons, which came out in the middle of 2022. Then the second book, Can I Steal You for a Second, came out in April 2023. And the third and final book in this trilogy, Not Here to Make Friends, came out in January this year. So we're getting shorter and shorter on those time frames there. But these three books all take place on the same COVID set of a reality dating show like The Bachelor called Marry Me, Juliet. And, oh, it's just fascinating. And talking to Jodie about how she wrote these books, and because then, obviously, then by the time we get to the third one, we kind of know a lot of what's been happening in different corners of this, like, set and their house and with other characters, and kind of filling in this world with everything that's already happened and has already been established. Oh my gosh, it's just fascinating to hear about the writing process for this series and for the third book in particular. It was so fun.
Such a fascinating world. And of course, we also touch base with a little bit of reality TV stuff, because we couldn't chat to Jodie without, you know, just talking a little bit about that stuff too. So we hope you enjoy.
So welcome, Jodie. We're talking to you again after about 2 years, but you've published three books.
Yeah. Only three? It might be four, actually, if you count my academic books. I'm trying to count them in my mind. Yeah, yes. I think the last time I talked to you was just before Here for the Right Reasons came out. So yeah. I've published the three books in the Marry Me, Juliet trilogy, and also an academic one in there. So four, technically.
Yeah. Yes,
you are amazing.
Of work, certainly. Yeah, I know. We did hear a bit about Here for the Right Reasons, but we were mainly talking about your last YA novel, Libby Lawrence is Good at Pretending. But please tell us about the Marry Me, Juliet series.
This is a series of three rom-coms that all take place concurrently on the same season of a reality dating show that is basically The Bachelor, but I didn't call it The Bachelor for legal reasons, but it's called Marry Me, Juliet. It's The Bachelor. So they're all taking place at the same time, but there's a different couple starring in each of the books. So the first book, Here for the Right Reasons, is about the bachelor, the Romeo in this world, who is a man named Dylan, and a contestant he eliminates on the first night, who's called Cece. The second book, Can I Steal You for a Second, is about two contestants falling in love with each other instead of with the bachelor. They're called Dylan also. There's two Dylans. Will that cause hijinks? Who knows? And the other one is Amanda, And then the third book, Not Here to Make Friends, which came out in January this year, it's the newest one, is about Murray, the producer, and Lily Fireball, the season villain. So across the three books, even though they're set at the same time and there is a little, we do cover the same events, you get wildly new perspectives and kind of new arenas of the reality TV world open up to you. So in the first book, because we're in Cece's perspective and she got eliminated on the first night, she's seeing one set of things. And it's set on a series of The Bachelor, where for reasons no one can leave the set, including eliminated contestants. So she's like locked away in this other house called the convent. So we get that kind of eliminated contestant perspective. In the second book, which is from Amanda's perspective, we see what it's like to be a contestant who is still in the game. And then in the third book, we see what it is like to be a producer and be making this whole mess happen.
Oh my gosh. It's
amazing.
So fun. And oh my God, the work that must have gone into like plotting everything out. But I just wanted to talk about Not Here to Make Friends. For a sec, because I thought, like, I knew the third book was about the producer and the villain, and I was like, oh my gosh, but we've already seen so much, like, outside the main mansion and inside the mansion with all the contestants and everything. And then I was like, well, this will be, like, fun extra behind the scenes. And then there was just so much more going on behind the scenes. And even especially Murray, because in the other two books, Murray is quite a big character as, like, the lead producer on the series. So we had already seen quite a fair bit of both Murray and Lily Fireball. So did that make writing the third book even harder? I'm sure it did.
Yes and no. So okay. The reason I say no is because I knew where all the events had to go. You know, there's no changing the things that happened on this season of Marry Me Juliet, because I've already set them in stone and I know where these people are at any given point in time. I'm like, okay, we're in episode 5 of the show. This means Murray is doing this and Lily is doing this. Yeah. But what made it hard was kind of taking them beyond the portrayal that we see in those first two books and really kind of opening up their inner worlds, because the reason they are particularly difficult characters and I had to walk, I think, a finer tightrope with them than with the other ones, is not just because we're going through events that we've already seen before, so they have to be really interesting, but they're not very nice, either of them. Yeah. Neither of them are particularly nice people. So Cece and Amanda and the two Dylans are like varying degrees of spiky, but at their core, they're all very nice, very good people.
Yeah. And all truly looking for love on this very cynical environment of a reality dating show.
They
like,
are here for the right
they
reasons.
They are. And like all of them go into it quite open-hearted, whereas then we have our like, you know, manipulative producer and the series villain who's like we've already witnessed be so mean to everyone else.
Yeah, so these are two people who are, they're not at all nice and they are Machiavellian, both of them. They are schemers and they don't always particularly care about other people's feelings. In fact, Murray can't care about other people's feelings because if he did, he'd never be able to do his job. Yeah. So he has to kind of turn that human empathy side of his brain all the way down, despite the fact he's a very emotionally intelligent man, and he also wouldn't be able to do his job if he couldn't read other people's emotions. So
they
both got
like a key part of actually being able to be in that role, isn't it? You do have to be quite emotionally intelligent. You just have to be okay with using that for the wrong reasons.
they're probably, you know, both, they're not sociopaths, but they're closer to that than some other people would be. Let's put it that way. they're missing some crucial checks and balances along the way. And so making them, kind of embracing this as a villain romance in some ways and making this a book about two people who aren't nice, when so much of romance is about the likable, that was really difficult. But what I tried to do was being like, okay, just say you don't necessarily like these people. I like both of them, but some people might not.
I do.
What I want people to do is find them fascinating. And I hope that I achieved that.
Oh, they are fascinating. I know. And I guess I'm like, is it a big spoiler to talk about Lily? I'm like, I want to, but I don't know how big, it's a bit of a spoiler, but it also is revealed quite quickly at the start of the book.
It's revealed on the first page.
Yeah. It's like very quickly. So
that's
I think
fair.
The blurb that's even fair. Says, yeah, I think it's okay. Well, if anyone doesn't want spoilers, we've just given plenty of warning. But even in the blurb, it says Lily Fireball is not who she says she is. And then straight away, we find out that she actually used to be a producer on this series, and she and Murray have been friends for years, which I was completely shocked, personally.
Good, I was that's like, what I wanted to happen.
Whoa. Again, because most people would be going into reading this book having read the others as a series, and so we know these characters already, and mind blown. But also, it's the only book that's dual perspective. Can you talk to us a bit about that?
Yeah, that was awful. That was really horrible. I did not intend for it to be dual perspective.
Whose perspective was it going to be from? Was it going to be Murray?
Yeah. Yeah. Lily was never a character I intended to write. I never intended to write from her perspective because she's kind of this trickster character. Yeah. I had this image of her in my mind as someone that you never kind of got hold of, that she was always a little bit opaque,
yeah.
That you might be fascinated by her, but you could never quite grasp her. So I turned in my first draft, and I was really happy with the first draft I turned in, which was not the case with Can I Steal You for a Second in particular. I remember when I turned in that one, I was like, oh no, I don't know about this. But with Not Here to Make Friends, I turned it in and I was happy, and I was like, nah, good, I've written a good book. And then my editor, bless, she went through so much with me over the, you know, kind of editing process of this. She called me up and was like, what a good draft. Needs to be dual perspective, though. And I just about lost my mind. Like, this is not the best behaved I've ever been as an author, I have to say.
It's a pretty big change.
Yeah. Not that I was a monster or anything. Mm. I don't want to get a reputation as a diva, but I was, like, sickened by how much work that would be. Not just because it would involve like a lot of rewriting, but because the kind of big conceit of at least the first kind of the novel is that Murray doesn't know why Lily is doing this. Murray doesn't know what Lily is thinking. And I was like, well, look, if we have half this book from Lily's perspective, then the audience is going to know what Lily is thinking, and then there's no conflict. And my editor was like, I hear you, but like, everyone loves Lily. Lily is the fan favorite character. Some of this book has to be from Lily's perspective. And I literally did not sleep for 2 nights. Like, this is not an exaggeration. I was sleepless for 48 hours in just this kind of like blind panic.
Yeah.
Of
how am I going to do this?
How do I fix this book? I thought I was going to have to throw the whole thing out, reconsider the whole concept, and start again. I was like, this conflict doesn't work. I am going to have to set this on fire, burn it down to the ground, and start again. Which, when you're kind of locked into the events that happen in a book because you've already written them twice, is not something you really expect to happen.
No.
So I was like, oh, Jesus Christ, no. But then at about 3 a.m. on the second sleepless night, I was like, okay, these two characters have a really long history. What if it's dual perspective and also dual timeline, and we do the past from Lily's perspective, and this way we know what she was thinking but not what she is thinking, so we can kind of triangulate the problem and kind of give the reader more tools to try and work out alongside Murray what the hell is going
what
on
is
with
Lily doing
why
there?
Is she turned up.
Yeah,
but it's the hardest thing I've ever had to do as an author by far. Not Here to Make Friends was harder than my other 6 novels combined.
Oh wow Oh my god.
Yeah, I mean, this is what happens when you write about Machiavellian masterminds. They do psychological warfare on each other, and then they also do it to you.
Oh my gosh.
And also, I do have to say my editor was right. She was right to make me do this. I felt very hard done by at the time, but she was completely correct. So, like, please don't be going and hunting down my editor and being like, why were you so mean to poor Jody? She was extremely correct to make me do this.
It is hard to imagine not having that, maybe not having as much background as well as not having a bit of a voice from Lily to try and figure out what's going on. Like, if it is just Murray wondering what's happening, I don't know. It's strange to say that, though, because the other two books are single perspective, and it didn't feel
that way. A lot of the flashback that I have in the book now was in the original book. It was just from Murray's perspective. It wasn't quite as aggressively dual timeline as it is now, where it's kind of chapter on, chapter off. But there was a lot of that backstory was there. I didn't have to create that from whole cloth. I just had to really reorganize a book that I had. I'd really not banked on doing this like level of structural edit on, and like I had a ginormous academic thing fall into my lap at the same time. So there a month last year I straight up don't remember. I was working like 18-hour days. Like it was brutal. Honestly, really glad with how the novel turned out. The academic thing probably less so. But it was a bit of a perfect storm for me with kind of various parts of my life.
We spoke to you about your academic work as well, because it involves a lot of reality TV and sort of the world around that, and obviously writing about it for this trilogy of books as well. Is watching The Bachelor and, you know, Married at First Sight and all those other sort of reality shows still fun for you, even though you've sort of, it is your job and it's something that, you know, you've sort of explored so deeply, you've sort of peeled back the curtain. Is it still fun?
It depends on the show. Like The Bachelor in particular, I've spent so much time on that when a new season of The Bachelor is announced here, I march into it with like grim resignation. I'm like, okay, here we go. This means because I write recaps of every episode. I'm like, okay, I have to sit down and write a 2,500 word essay every night. Mm. Cool. Which when they put it on four nights a week is brutal.
Yeah, it's a lot.
But there are other shows that I haven't written about quite so much that I can still like enjoy. The one that makes my brain feel the nicest is Love Island. Like Love Island has never required anyone to think.
Yeah. So that's just, I guess it's like you still enjoy, like we still love the books that we're talking about. We love talking about them and we love talking to the authors and we love thinking deeply about them. But there does come a time when you're like, I would just love to read something or watch something where I don't have to think and analyze this. And I had this moment.
Or without a deadline.
Without a deadline. We've been reading some incredible books for this season of the podcast, some things that are so great to talk about because they have all these issues in them. And I was at work, I work in a bookshop now, Jodie, and I was at work and I was like, oh my gosh, I just need to read something that is like the equivalent of like junk food. Like I just need something where I'm not going to analyze. It's not an issues book. It's not something I want to talk about with people apart from to say, wow, I ended up reading our thriller of the month and then, you know, was able to recommend it to lots of people and be like, I read this in a day on my day off. I could not put it down. It's great. But that's what it is. It's like,
that's
okay,
classic.
Still
work.
Yeah. I know
reading
it's
the book
still
of
work.
The month at work.
I know, but Caitlin, like, what am I going to do? My downtime is reading. Everything I do relates to my job or this podcast or my whole, like, I can't escape that, obviously, but like it was that
I mean, I feel that very deeply as a romance author who also studies romance. Sometimes I talk about myself as having two careers, but it's kind of the Venn diagram is almost a circle, you know. Like I'm playing in the same space with both, so, and sometimes you're like, what if something different though that I don't have to critically interrogate for once or create.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I was like, you know what? This isn't for the podcast. I'm not going to recommend it on the podcast, but if I'm going to read something else that's not podcast related, it should be something that I probably should read for work, and then I can sell some books at work. So, you know, and so far that is my most successful. I'm selling that all the time.
Well, that's good, but that's still work.
I know.
But it is funny, isn't it? All that stuff. I mean, I don't know. All these silly little rules in our head. It is like you saying, Jodie, it's like, oh, the one that feels the least like work is Married at First Sight. No, Love Island, you said, sorry.
Love Island, yeah.
Yeah, which is so funny. I'm not...
That said, I was like, what if I... Yeah, I was like, what if I, you know, wrote a Love Island series? And I have no plans to do this, but I have come up with the titles purely based on, like, my viewership of Love Island. They would be My Type on Paper, Eggs in One Basket, and It Is What It Is.
Yes! Oh,
they would be the three.
So
I was
good.
Like, what other things that they say?
Yeah, because the title...
You just have to look at what's written on the walls of the villa, you know?
Yes. Well, now it's like, oh, that would be so good. Yeah, I don't want to make this work for you, but it would be amazing.
I mean, I have other things I'm doing first, but maybe one day we'll come back to reality TV. Maybe Murray and Lily will be making a new show and they accidentally invent Love Island. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe they invent Love Island. Exactly.
Well, yeah, I've always been fascinated fascinated with the behind the scenes of Love Island. I want a documentary on that, how they do it so quickly and turn it around so quickly, because it's like only a few days behind what's actually happening in the villa. And I want, like, what's happening in the editing suite? How are you putting all that together? Like, I want to know that. That's what I want.
Sometimes that gap is as little as 4 hours.
That is insane. That is insane. I mean, I know that they're going into it with, like, storylines and stuff that they want to, I guess, create a little bit and, like, you know, speak to this person and blah, blah, blah. But still, like, to the mechanics of let's edit this, let's get it live, let's do all the cuts that we need to do from all the different cameras around the villa. It's just insane.
Particularly, like, it's produced, obviously, and producers are talking to the contestants, but it's not as aggressively produced as The Bachelor or MAFS. So, because it's, you know, they want to kind of maintain that Big Brother style artifice. They can't have the audience not being able to connect the emotional dots. So they need to kind of be a little bit more hands off, though they are there much more than it looks like.
Yeah, it still feels it feels like they're not there, though. It feels like it's sort of all unfolding. And when people say, like, talk to this person or whatever, it feels like it's the group of people who are saying, you should talk to this person, or, like, it's so clever. So clever.
Yeah, well, maybe Murray and Lily will invent that one day. I'll just have to think of the kind of Marry Me Juliet universe name for Love Island.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, speaking of, I'm curious, did you watch Fuckboy Island?
I did watch Fuckboy Island, yes.
I meant to, and I actually never did.
It actually, yeah, it was kind of good. I was here for it. Like, yeah, it was great.
Yeah. I loved it. So the guy that created Fuckboy Island, the original American version, not obviously the Australian Abby Chatfield version, but, you know, the DNA is the same, yeah, is a man named Elon Gale, who was basically a Murray on The Bachelor in the US for many, many, many years. Like, he is a big figure in Bachelor Nation. So you can see that kind of savvy that he gained doing Murray's job over on The Bachelor, really kind of taken to its most evil end in some ways in Fuckboy Island, but also its most comical end, which I think is funny.
Yeah, it was totally. Really good. It was, and I mean, obviously, we had the perfect host in Abby Chatfield as well. Like, it just made it so good.
Yeah, completely. She is the perfect choice for that.
Anyway, enough reality chat.
Yeah. well, never enough. We're still technically talking about reality TV. And my next question is sort of about the reality TV, because I'm curious about how you planned and structured these novels.
So I have some extremely complicated spreadsheets.
Oh, great.
But what I started with once I kind of realized what I wanted to do here was that I started by working out what would happen in every episode of the show. So I plotted out the arc of season 11 of Marry Me Juliet overall.
Basically done a whole reality show arc as well. I love it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you have to. Oh, like, if I hadn't done that, then Murray would look really bad at his job.
That's true.
This had to be a good season of reality TV for the bit to land as well. So, but if I knew what happened in every episode, then I could, because I know what a reality TV arc looks like. I know what a hero arc looks like. I know what a winner arc looks like. I know what a villain arc looks like. Because I've been writing about this show for so fucking long. That bit came kind of naturally. And then I could think about where my characters kind of sat in relation to that. Yeah. So to use Can I Steal You for a Second as an example, I've got two frontrunner contestants in there. And obviously front runners are often pitted against each other. They're made competitive. So I was like, okay, how would the show be trying to pit Amanda and Dylan G against each other? How would they be resisting that? What spaces are available to them outside being filmed to be together, which is how I ended up with so many of their scenes in the bathroom. And so once I knew what was happening in the world of the show, I could work out what was happening in the world around the show. And because Murray is essentially creating the show, I worked out a lot of his motivations a long time before I actually came to write Not Here to Make Friends. So there are kind of manipulations that he pulls in that book, which you see him do in the earlier two books, but you don't necessarily know why.
Yeah.
So one of my favorite examples is that in the first episode, he sits Cece down to do like a what's called an ITM, an in-the-moment interview, like the confessional talking head interview. interviews, and in Here for the Right Reasons, Cece is like, oh, he's, because she's having a hard time on camera, she's like, oh, he's really kind of hand-feeding me the questions here. Okay, I know what I need to do. I know what I need to say. But in reality, he's lost patience with how much work she is, and he's setting her up to be eliminated.
Yeah.
And you can see that really clearly in his perspective, that he's got this whole other agenda going on that's for completely different, not here for the right reasons reason.
Yeah, absolutely. One of my favorite bits was so early in the season, and after like seeing all the contestants meet each other and everything, where like he's with other producers and he's like, what are we going to do about Amanda and Dylan G? And like neither of them have, like, so early on it's like very different in like in Can I Steal You for a Second, and like straight away in Not Here to Make Friends he's like, oh my god, how are we going to handle that situation, we've got to keep them apart. Like, it's so clever.
There are so many moments in the first two books where the two couples there are like, oh yeah, we can just keep this from Murray, we can hide this, but he is so emotionally intelligent that he knows it.
He knows everything the entire time. And it's
like, there's a bit in Can I Steal You for a Second where Amanda and Dylan G have been fighting, but then they've had their kind of romantic apotheosis, and they go, oh, we should stage a, like, friend makeup for the show. Let's talk to Murray about that. That could be such a good storyline. And they pitch it to him, and they think they've really sold it, and he immediately goes back to Lily and is like, well, Amanda and Dylan G are fucking.
Yeah.
He's really good at his job.
Yeah, he is. He knows exactly what's going on.
I mean, because he's not very nice, that is one of the ways in which I wanted to make him attractive. Competent people are inherently attractive, and he is. He is very competent. He's extremely good at what he does.
So fascinating. And I suppose it's an interesting order, actually, if you think about the series as a whole, being like Cece is outside the mansion, and then Amanda is inside the mansion, and then Murray is controlling the mansion. It's actually a very deliberate order of events.
Extremely on purpose.
Yeah, because you couldn't, if anyone read Not Here to Make Friends first, like, obviously there's still a lot to enjoy about the other two books, but it actually made me want to go back and reread them. To be like,
good.
To,
yeah. That's my intention.
Because you, like you said about like the even that first thing with Cece, where she's like, oh, he's so nice and he's helping me. And he was like, so annoyed.
Yeah, I had, after Here for the Right Reasons came out, people really loved Lily. They were like, she is such a bitch. I'm obsessed with her. Please make the next book Lily's book. And I would be like,
wait.
No, you gotta wait. There's no, like, if I put that in reverse order with Mandy and Dylan G last, it wouldn't work.
Yeah.
Like, you can technically read the series in any order. You could technically start with Can I Steal You for a Second or put it last, but I think the best journey is to read them
chronologically. Well. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is, so there you go. You did plan it sort of like one book, but it was three books.
Yeah. Like, have I told you the origin story of this before?
Maybe not.
I can't remember if I...
Because we didn't talk about it that much, like, in our last interview, so...
Yeah, so it was during Lockdown 2. I live in Melbourne in 2020. I'm sure we all remember how cool and fun lockdowns were. And during this particular lockdown, it happened to coincide with Lachie Gilbert's season of The Bachelor here, which I don't know if either of you watched it, but it sucked.
Yeah.
It was really not very good. And like, they were dealing with COVID, and I was actually really excited and really interested to see how that would work. I was like, cool. Like, sometimes as a creative, the more restrictions you have, the more creative you have to be. So I was like, they have to break the format. Let's see what they do. And what they, like, how do you do big romance when what you have is small living rooms? And then what they tried to do was just The Bachelor, but on Zoom, and it sucked. And so then I had a terrible thought, which was, oh, what would you do, Jodie? And I remember vividly, I had like a regular Friday night Zoom with some of my friends, and I remember logging on and I was like, friends, I have had a terrible idea and I need you to talk me out of it. And they didn't, and now here we are.
Yeah. That
good
that
friends.
Is an amazing inspiration story for a series.
Yeah.
But so
Here for the Right Reasons in particular was a real pandemic baby.
Yeah.
And once I kind of knew I wanted to do this and I'd made my spreadsheet, I wrote the first draft of that book in 3 weeks.
Wow.
I have never, ever written like that before, and I never, ever will again. It was like the pandemic broke my brain in a fun way where 3 weeks later a book happened.
Yeah.
Like, I am not a binge writer at all normally. I'm quite disciplined. I write in the mornings and then I do my day job. But unless, you know, I have to add in Lily's perspective, in which case I work at every hour of every day.
Yeah.
But with that one, it was just like, I'm sure we all remember how time came unstuck in lockdown.
Yeah.
And I came unstuck from the world and from time, and then there was a draft of Here for the Right Reasons, which I then edited a lot, and like a lot more than 3 weeks of work went into it.
Yeah.
But the kind of raw first draft, 3 weeks.
Yeah, just from your, I mean, our brains were functioning completely differently. So, you know, you'd watch The Bachelor, thought about it, and was like, hang on. And then it just like, I don't know, it was all in the back of your mind. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. You just kind of this maniacal laughter started coming out of my mouth. And suddenly there was a book.
Ooh.
Just like, like a meme of like slamming the keyboard or something. Yeah.
I mean, it helped that I had made these spreadsheets and I knew I had a scaffold. It wasn't like I was like truly pantsing a novel where I had no idea where I was going to go or where I was going to end up. I was sensible enough to stop and spreadsheet first. But honestly, like working out what was going to happen in the show did not take me very long. So even though it is a complicated spreadsheet, it was a couple of days work, maybe.
What a talent you have for reality TV structure and storylines and everything.
I mean, that's what happens when you study it for as long as I have. Yeah. Like, I have recapped every episode of the Australian franchise going back to 2015. And I tried to add up once how many words that is, and it's more than 500,000.
It would
like
be, oh my God. Yeah.
It's an astonishing amount of words.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's absolutely
insane.
So,
in terms of, like, planning that out then, like you said, you know who's getting what edit, and you can then use that formula to create your spreadsheets and plan the rest of your book.
Yeah.
I mean, amazing.
People ask me all the time, like, oh, how much research did you do for these books? And my immediate instinct is to say none. Because
yeah,
I didn't. I made a spreadsheet and then I started writing. And it's like, except for, you know, that several year chunk of my academic career.
Yeah.
I just didn't do it on purpose to write novels.
Yeah.
I was doing that to write academic articles that maybe four people would write.
Yeah, you'd just done all the research already. Now I have to ask, at the very end of Not Here for the Right Reasons, there's this like moment thing about two other characters that have been, you know, on this series and through like on the TV show through the whole series. They're characters we know. And I was like, oh my God, it's obviously not going to be the same season of the show concurrently, but is there any possibility of more novels in this world?
Yeah. So that is not going to be my next book, but it is not off the table, put it this way.
Okay, fun.
Like when I was pitching my next book, that book was one of the pitches and that went in the like, not yet.
Not pile. Right now so, pile. Yeah.
Yeah. Though my next book does take place kind of in the Marry Me Juliet like universe, as in Marry Me Juliet is a show that exists in this world. But the actual character who is a bridge over to this new world is Murray's ex-wife, Julia.
Oh.
So this is this new series. Can I say the title? Yeah. So my next book is called An Academic Affair. It's currently due to come out in February next year. And it is an academic rivals to lovers book. It's not about Julia, but she's the bridge over to the world, and we'll get to her book eventually. Like, keen-eyed readers of Not Here to Make Friends will have seen Julia having a little something in the background of this book, and I haven't let that thread go. We're tugging at that one. So,
oh, I love that.
Yeah, wow. I was like, oh, what else don't I have to research? Universities.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, this ties back into you writing academically. Again, another world that you know very, very well.
Yeah, I'm going to be in trouble when I run out of things that I know about.
Yeah.
And I actually have to do research for books, then tough times, tough times.
Yeah. I mean, obviously writing and your work keeps you very busy, but is now maybe the time to pick up some kind of hobby and then maybe you can go to that world later on?
Yeah, well, I have thought a couple of books in the future, and another thing I do know quite a lot about is wine. So
we could be on a winery or something. Yeah. I'm sure there's lots there. That's the whole industry.
There might be some wine books in my future. Okay.
And I mean, you can always revisit the world of amateur dramatics. We know that that is a very fertile ground for stories. there's all sorts of stuff going on there as well, and you have that experience. So
so people often, you know, I think they ask all authors this, but they go, oh, do you put yourself in your books? And the answer is no. I never write a character that's like a Jodie self insert, but I aggressively steal the world. Like Libby Lawrence is very much a stolen world. Like reality TV, I'm like, oh yeah, I know this.
You know,
the university one's going to be even worse, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I have never actually been on reality TV, but oh, I have spent many years working in higher education. So this was kind of even less research required for this one, about two professional researchers who hate each other but also don't hate each other.
Yeah, love it.
Yeah.
Love it. That's
I love that.
Great.
That sounds so fun.
And also that answered one of our questions, which was, what are you working on at the moment?
So I just got my edit notes back for this, and after Not Here to Make Friends, I was bracing myself. I was like, oh God, what if they ask me to write the book backwards? What if they ask me to make it from 47 different perspectives? And they were like, no, this is pretty good. Just a couple of little things here and there. Can you have it back to us in a few weeks? And I was like, oh, thank God.
Yeah, that's much better to hear.
I was like excited that they liked it, but more than anything, I was just so relieved.
Yeah. Yes, that makes sense. Would I guess that this academic theme book is more fun to write than, as we previously mentioned, your academic book that was published in the last couple of years? This fictionalized version, it's a bit more fun, maybe?
A lot of the academic work I do is really fun.
Yeah.
So the academic work that I published last year, my other academic book, is co-authored with Claire Parnell from the University of Melbourne and Andrea Ann Trinidad from Ateneo de Manila University. And it's about the romance fiction industry in the Philippines, which is really, really fascinating thing. And right before COVID, Claire and I went to the Philippines. We met up with Anne and we interviewed a bunch of romance authors in the Philippines, which was super fun. And the current project I'm working on two projects, actually, both collaborative. One is with Dr. Amy Burge from the University of Birmingham, and we are doing a project on Bonk Busters, which are kind of sexy books from the 1970s, 80s, 90s. Think like Jackie Collins, Julie Cooper, Shirley Conran, Judith Krantz.
Oh, wow.
Kind of often synonymous with airport fiction. Confused with romance a lot of the time, but not quite the same. They are very sexy, very scandalous. And then the other project I'm doing with Dr. Athena Bellis from the University of Melbourne is on audio erotica, looking at apps like Dipsy and Quinn and Furly and MJoy and this kind of emergent sphere
Wow, that'd be interesting.
And then I've got, you know, my own little research interests too.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, have you done anything on like the whole TikTok romance, how TikTok is, you know, changing or not changing, I'm not sure, the way that we consume romance or the way that romance is published?
Yeah, so I haven't written about it, but it's hard to ignore, honestly.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Before Here for the Right Reasons came out, my publisher was like, oh, do you want to be on TikTok? And I was like, no, I'm too elderly for TikTok. And they were like, Jodie, do you want to be on TikTok? And I was like, oh, I do. Yeah. And yeah, so I have a TikTok that I post to every so often now. But yeah, it's very, very interesting because I don't think what TikTok is doing is new.
Like, no, social I've media said that to people. Yeah, if you've been in that, because we've been book blogging and stuff for like, oh my God, like 12 years now since I started my book blog.
Yeah.
You see it, but the people who are starting to see it now are like, oh my God, this is a new thing. It's definitely, I think, more pronounced, like just from from my perspective, not academic at all. I think it's more pronounced with TikTok because the reach and virality of TikTok that's sort of unprecedented.
It's so easily accessible.
Before, and it's so big. Yeah,
it's not a new phenomenon, but what's different is the scale.
Yeah.
And I think, am I right in saying that TikTok are going to start publishing too, or TikTok are going to start moving into publishing some way?
I mean, that kind of tale has been going around for, I would say, a while now.
Yeah, a couple of years, I think.
I've never seen anything more than, oh, TikTok's going to start a publishing house. I've never seen what step two in that looks like. So I guess we'll have to, wait and see. But I think the way we know that TikTok is different in terms of scale is that it's had an effect on shelving in bookstores.
It has indeed.
Like one of the Yeah. Like, one of the other academic books I wrote, which came out in 2021, was called New Adult Fiction. And it was about
I think we spoke to you about this. Yeah.
Yeah. So just, like, tracing the lineage of that term. Yeah. But the reason why it kind of failed and why still even today people can't really say what new adult fiction is, no one can agree on what it means, is that when St. Martin's tried to make new adult happen in 2009, there was no buy-in from the bookstores. They were like, we are not creating new shelving space for this. Yeah. And if you can't organize by a category, then the category might as well not exist for for anyone beyond the casual reader. TikTok is almost a genre now, not as in all the books are the same, but you can sort by what is a TikTok book.
It is fascinating.
There was a quote from, I think, Ali Watts, who works at Penguin. Sorry, Ali, if you did not say this, but I'm pretty sure I saw it attributed to her, that it's almost mathematically impossible to have a bestseller from Australia because our market here isn't large enough that it can spike the TikTok algorithm.
Yeah. It's really upsetting that local books, it's really rare now for local books to top the like Australian bestseller charts because you just can't compete with the numbers that like week in, week out you see international titles like Fourth Wing or Taylor Jenkins Reid or even like Dolly Alderton and Atomic Habits. They're just like the top of
you almost do need like a separate, like, this is a bestseller because of, it's so hard. How do you attribute that? But it is so hard.
But like with the kind of popularity of romanticy at the moment, I'm like, okay, cool. This is what's happening right now. Obviously, the wave will fall off eventually. What's next? And my big prediction is a like resurgence of romantic suspense as people try and make the, like, I mean, romantic suspense has been around for a long time, but I think people will be like, oh, romance plus fantasy. What if romance plus crime? Yeah. And then they will say it is a new thing, even though it is absolutely not. It has been around for an extremely long time. But that's Jodie's bold prediction for what's next. I'm correct, I get a high five.
That is a great prediction to end on, Jodie. Thank you so much for joining us again. We've had so much fun and, you know, it's great that you are here for the right reasons. And, yeah, so excited to see sort of how you expand the universe and, like, have these other little interconnected books in the future. I'm very excited for your academic series as well.
Oh, thank you so much. I am, in fact, on Better Words, to make friends.
Yes, mission accomplished. Please let everyone know where they can find and follow you online.
Yeah, so I am on, for my sins, TikTok at Jodie McAllister. That's JodieMcAllister. Instagram, same thing, Jodie McAllister. I am on Twitter, I guess. Not really anymore.
So funny, literally everybody says that. Yeah,
everyone says this now. Don't worry about it. We're like, we're sort of there, but we're not there. It's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm Jodie MCA there, but I've kind of shifted my Twitter presence mostly over to Blue Sky, where I'm also Jodie MCA at bsky.social or whatever the end of everyone's Blue Sky handle is.
Cool. Excellent. Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Better Words. For even more recommendations, you can subscribe to our monthly newsletter on Substack at betterwords.substack.com.
We'd also love to continue the conversation on Instagram, where you can find us at BetterWordsPod.
You can also follow me, Caitlin, at Just a Bookish Babe.
And for more bookish discussions, find me, Michelle, on Substack at theunfinishedbookshelf.substack.com.
Just like with books, podcasts like ours rely on word-of-mouth recommendations.
So if you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a book-loving friend and leave a rating or review. We'd really appreciate it.